This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
No matter what the whip count is, we're calling for the vote. We want to see people stand up and say what their opinion is about Saddam Hussein and the utility of the United Nations Security Council. And so, you bet, it's time for people to show their cards, to let the world know where they stand when it comes to Saddam.
President Bush speaking at a press conference Thursday, the U.S., Britain, and Spain have introduced a United Nations resolution authorizing the use of force against Iraq. They say Saddam Hussein has not complied with last fall's resolution 1441, which called on Iraq to disarm immediately. Britain has since introduced new language to this week's resolution in hopes of swaying the council to pass it. Dan Shore joins us. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And whenever we examine a few days after a presidential announcement, it's not only the words and enunciated in the tone and the style, but inevitably questions about why did the president make the appearance then, not the day before, not the day after, how it fits into the timetable of other events. What's your estimation?
Well, the president conveyed a certain solemnity that was almost theatrical, a sense of a clock ticking towards a preordained conclusion. And trying to help out Tony Blair in Britain, the Bush administration agreed to add this March 17 deadline to a resolution that's meant already to proclaim that Iraq has flunked its disarmament test and therefore is open to invasion if that's what's happened now. Mm-hmm. That resolution is in danger of now of being voted down or vetoed down. It doesn't seem to concern the president, who's ready to tell the UN that it has flunked the challenge he laid out for last September 13th, disarm Saddam Hussein or be forever considered to be irrelevant. So the president wants people to know now that there's not only an Iraq crisis, but also a United Nations crisis, and the president is ready to declare the UN politically bankrupt, and the press conference was to say that this is a very, very grave time with a war imminent and the United Nations possibly left by the wayside.
It's almost overlooked that Hans Blix and Mohammed El-Baradei gave a report on Iraqi disarmament to the UN Security Council on Friday. And Mr. Blix said Iraq's cooperation with inspections has improved but still falls far short of unconditional compliance.
Right.
Do the reports that he and Mr. El-Baradei make move the debate forward or just deepen the disagreement?
I don't think it affected it very much because of its mixed message. It sort of indicated that the Iraqis have been helpful here and there, but they need to be more helpful. So if you're a hawk or a dove, you can find material in his reports to support your position. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things, though, is that the atomic energy chief, Mohammed El-Baradei, reported that a document that had been furnished to him by the United States and Britain that was supposed to show that Iraq was shopping for uranium in Africa was a forgery. Mm-hmm. that wasn't very helpful. And he said there was
not a forgery by the U.S. or Britain, I think
he said the document appears to be forged.
Yeah.
But it was passed to him by Britain and the U.S. Mm-hmm. And he says that I don't know where the Britain and U.S. got it from, but wherever they got it from, he said that the document appears to be a forgery. It had things in it which couldn't possibly be in such a document. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't help them very much either.
Mm-hmm. But let me ask, the administration had said that it didn't need a second resolution after 1441.
Mm-hmm.
Why force a vote now, particularly when it's not plain that they would have they almost certainly couldn't win because somebody would seem destined to veto it. But
well, that's interesting. I think it is, in a sense, the air that pervaded the news conference the other night, that there are certain things inevitable and have to happen in certain ways. And one way of showing that when we go to war, if we go to war, when we go to war, mm-hmm. that every possibility was exhausted, establishing a kind of a record. That's what I had, this funereal sense. Things are now going to happen one after the other. The thing to show you now is that mm-hmm. nobody can ever say, certainly not anybody in Britain can ever say, that we didn't try to go that last mile. We've gone past the last mile.
And if, as we're told, there's a vote maybe as early as next Tuesday on whether or not to establish a deadline for March 17th, if that vote fails, do you think the U.S. and Britain will observe a March 17th timetable, or might action begin before that?
Well, the March 17th timetable is almost meaningless. I mean, if you say you have until March 17th, which is 10 days from now, and it first has to be adopted, so say next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, well, you're throwing in 4 or 5 days there for the Iraqis to do what they clearly are not going to do in that given time. And so it's all very demonstrative and almost meaningless.
Let's turn now to North Korea, because the president is hoping for some multilateral effort to deal there, but so far the other nations in the region have not demonstrated that they want to participate. How long can this issue simmer without boiling over?
I don't know. It is a question of there are parts of this I really simply don't understand. The thing has been made a little bit more dangerous now by the fact that they apparently tried to force down an American spy plane. Mm-hmm. Clearly, this is escalating on the Korean side. On the American side, the Bush administration position is that we are sure this thing can be handled diplomatically, but isn't handling it diplomatically. They say we want to have a lot of people have a meeting. We want the neighbors in there. We want Russia, China, and South Korea. And North Korea says, we want to meet with the United States. If that is going to be the issue over which you go to war, I mean, the story is already appearing in the papers about contingency plans for airstrikes at nuclear facilities in North Korea. I don't know whether to take them serious or not, or whether this is part of psychological warfare that goes on at this point. Mm-hmm. But
like the 24 bombers that have been sent to Guam.
Like the 24 bombers sent to bomb, exactly. The game is being played in a peculiar way. If there's a diplomatic solution, the U.S. doesn't appear to be looking for it.
We do want to ask about the economy, because this affects so many millions of Americans. Unemployment has risen to 5.8%, according to the Labor Department on Friday. Gas in some areas of California has reached $3 a gallon. Dollars at a four-year low against the euro. Auto sales are dropping. Treasury bond yields are way down. There was not, however, a question about the economy at the president's press conference.
That was kind of interesting, as though the president really didn't want one. He kept looking at a paper in front of him which listed the people that he wanted to call on. I don't know how it turned out, but here he had a press conference of almost an hour, and there was not a single question on anything other than the Iraqi situation at a time when all the economic things, most of them bad news, that was going on. And so I don't exactly understand, but clearly that seemed to be the purpose. There was serious...
There's not a question about North Korea either, I believe.
There was not a question...
There was a question, I'm sorry.
A question, and for the rest, it was really all Iraq. But let me say, there may have been North Korea, but there really was as though this is a purely foreign policy threat. There was nothing domestic at all about what's going on in this country, and there are things going on, not all of them very good.
Senate Democrats blocked the confirmation of Miguel Estrada to the U.S. Court of Appeals, a setback for the administration, for the judicial selection process?
Well, obviously, if you can't get a judge confirmed, it's not very good for the selection process. And the fact that the Democrats say, yeah, but they did it when they were in power, so now we're going to do it when we're in power. All of this looks to me like a big, big, long rehearsal for what will really be the big one. The big one will be the next one or two positions to be filled on the Supreme Court. And then I think if they manage to bring the Supreme Court to a halt or leave it with only 8 or 7 justices, I think we will then know that our constitutional form of government is in even more danger than it sometimes appears to be.
Okay, Dan, thank you very much.
Sure.
Going to be watching Senator Dole and President Clinton on Sunday?
Well, it's nice that these two women senators managed to find something for their husbands to do.
Dan Shore.